Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gatehouse Florida. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined as always by Gatehouse Florida Capitol correspondent John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hello, Zach.
Well, Florida teachers have reason to be happy this week after Governor Ron DeSantis announced that he wants to boost the state's starting salary for teachers to $47,500. Meanwhile, felons seeking to regain the right to vote also appeared to have reason to be hopeful after a Florida judge strongly criticized legislation that has put up financial roadblocks to voting. We'll talk about both of those issues and the Republican effort here in Florida to push back against impeachment. But first, you all know what that music means. It's number picking time. John, what kind of number are you throwing out at us this week?
Zach, here in Tallahassee, everybody's focused on one number, and that's Florida State being a 27-point underdog against number two-ranked Clemson.
27 points. How far the mighty have fallen?
Oh, absolutely. That's considered the highest margin in FSU's modern football history. But I've got another number on my mind this week, and that's 227.
Not the spread in the FSU game here, but maybe if things keep plummeting, who knows?
And maybe the Gator spread, you know, for FSU versus Florida.
I've got a number that they'd much rather have as their spread. I'm keeping it simple this week with a 2. Remember those numbers, folks. Write them down. We'll tell you what they mean for Florida politics at the end of the show. All right, we're going to start off the show this week with some news that many Florida educators surely are excited about. Governor Ron DeSantis declared this week that he wants to make Florida a national leader when it comes to starting teacher salaries. His plan to boost the starting salary for classroom professionals would provide a pay raise for 60% of the state's teachers, which is more than 100,000 teachers. Or, to put it another way, 60% of Florida's teachers currently make less than $47,500. The proposal would cost $603 million annually. Here's what DeSantis had to say when he unveiled this idea at an event in Clay County earlier this week.
You know, having a great teacher in front of the students is really, the best thing that you can do. And so we really believe in teacher quality and in rewarding, recruiting, and retaining good teachers. And if you talk to different people about how you can do that, I think one of the things that most people think is effective is having a better minimum starting salary so that people who have options in their careers can go into teaching and be able to earn a good living. Obviously, people go in more for service reasons, and same with other areas of life like the military. But I do think that that's important. So what we're going to be doing in my budget recommendations this year is we're going to be asking the legislature to increase the minimum starting salary for teachers in this state to $47,500.
Now, DeSantis went on to say that he believes his plan will get bipartisan support, and he said it can be achieved simply by, quote, prioritizing teacher pay in the budget. But the question of how to pay for this raise led to some early pushback. House Speaker Jose Oliva, a Miami Republican, put out a statement noting that the governor's agencies have submitted more than $2 billion in new spending requests so far, and lawmakers must approve a balanced budget, Oliva noted. John, let's start with the practical implications of this and then get into the politics a little bit. I mean, practically speaking, this could be a pretty big game changer in Florida. DeSantis noted that it would put the state in the top 5 for starting teacher pay. That's kind of a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be. Starting pay would suddenly be attractive in Florida. And, you have the national average for starting teachers is just over $39,000 a year. So what DeSantis is proposing would put Florida near the top nationwide, topping even California and New York. Those are states that Florida doesn't often compare to in such rankings. But, you know, it could help the state with vacancies, you know, which ran about 4,000 open positions at the start of last school year, and that continues to plague many counties. So it would be a good thing if Florida was seen as a destination place for teachers, maybe. But of course, you know, DeSantis' proposal, it doesn't do much for the teachers with years of experience. That's another area where Florida has been lagging. You got to remember, national average for teachers tops 60,400 a year. And Florida's overall average is just over 48,000. So we've got plenty of room to improve there. But, you know, increasing those new to the profession is certain to create pressures within the counties to boost the salaries of longer term teachers. And of course, DeSantis's idea doesn't anticipate or recommend spending for that. So you've got a division among the profession. You know, that may be one of the reasons that the state's largest teachers union, the Florida Education Association, that's been pretty, you know, modest in its praise for the governor's proposal so far.
You could hear some grumbling from the 40% of teachers who wouldn't be getting a raise under this proposal. But you mentioned vacancies, and it seems like this could be really significant in trying to fill all those vacancies. It's interesting that DeSantis announced this this week, just recently. I think it was just last week. I was at a meeting of the Manatee County legislative delegation where Senator Bill Galvano was there. He's the Senate president. He's from Bradenton, Manatee County. And, you know, he got into a bit of an exchange with the Manatee County School Board Chair, Dave Miner, who both of them are Republicans. You know, both of them are generally supportive of the direction, I think, of the legislature. But Miner was really complaining about teacher pay and that education was underfunded in Florida, and he brought up this idea of vacancies and said they have way too many vacancies, and it's a big problem for not only the Manatee County school system, but the school systems throughout the state of Florida. And it seems like, you know, filling those vacancies, if you have a much higher floor for starting salaries, this could be a significant way to get that done. Well, let's talk a little bit about the politics of this as well. I mean, politically, this seems like another effort by DeSantis to sort of reach across the aisle and portray a more centrist image that could benefit him in the next election cycle when he hopes to win by a much bigger margin than in 2018, which was the closest governor's race in Florida history. Is this smart politics, John?
Yeah, you know, we'd mentioned this in an earlier episode of this podcast when DeSantis acknowledged that he was working on this teacher pay idea. You know, in an election year, which we're coming up on now, the governor is not going to be on the ballot, but plenty of other Republicans will be, including President Trump. In an election year, the Republican governor's move might be seen as softening some of the traditional animosity that the FEA, the teachers union, has toward Republican candidates. It makes it harder for the union to, you know, kind of demonize Republicans running for the state house or Senate as being out of touch with the needs of parents and school kids. If the governor, you know, suddenly has gone to bat for teachers, even if it's, you know, only for those that are new to the profession. But DeSantis is going to have to do some selling of his idea though. Just as you pointed out, in Manatee County, you can see a little bit of a, you know, friction between some of the leading Republicans. House Speaker Jose Oliva, as you mentioned, he's already distanced himself from the governor on other spending ideas. Now, he reacted very coolly to this teacher pay increase.
What do you make of that, John? Because Oliva is a big ally of Richard Corcoran, who was the former House Speaker. And, you know, they're kind of cut from the same cloth in terms of, especially in terms of being against things like, you know, economic incentives, corporate welfare. They've been pretty much on the same page in terms of, you know, things like school choice and trying to expand vouchers and charter schools. Now Corcoran goes over to the governor's office and he's, you know, the education secretary, and he's standing there next to DeSantis as he announces this big teacher pay raise that Oliva is throwing cold water on.
Yeah, I mean, that is interesting. And you got to remember, too, that Oliva was one of the first sort of establishment Republicans to endorse candidate Ron DeSantis back when, right. You know, most of the establishment was behind his Republican primary opponent. That was then Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. But Oliva is a, you know, harsh fiscal conservative, cut from the Americans for Prosperity cloth. You know, the Koch brothers organized grassroots organization. all told, I think Oliva is still clinging to some of that. We've seen Oliva pushing back against the governor on the governor's plan to try to continue funding for Visit Florida. That's something that Oliva is not a fan of. And, you know, Oliva talked generally about the tightening revenue flow that the state is expecting over the next 3 years. And he pointed to a lot of other needs, particularly in healthcare and social services that are going to have to be met. But, you know, all told, though, with the governor making this an issue, I'd say look for it to happen, at least something very similar to what he's outlined. Republicans see both the political advantage and the social advantage of boosting starting teachers' pay. But, you know, Oliva has a point, and it may be hard to meet this price tag without other cuts. And somewhat ironically, some of those other cuts might come in education.
When DeSantis made this announcement this week, Rob Bradley, the Senate budget chair, was standing next to him. So it seems like the Senate is definitely in his corner on this. And, you know, Oliva might just be trying to play things down to negotiate for things that the House wants, or maybe they try and cut this raise down a little bit so it's not $47,500, but something else. So, you know, this is early on, and some of this stuff could be sort of negotiating tactics here. But when you have the governor and the Senate kind of pushing against the House, it does seem like that this will have some momentum. Well, it wasn't just Florida teachers who had reason to smile this week. Felons who are trying to get their voting rights back heard some encouraging words from a judge who is overseeing the case against a Florida law that implements Amendment 4, the constitutional amendment that automatically restores voting rights for most felons who complete all the terms of their sentences. The legislature weighed in on Amendment 4 this year and passed a bill that requires felons to pay back all financial obligations, such as court fees and victim restitution, before they get their voting rights back. And then supporters of Amendment 4 challenged the law in court as a poll tax. The two sides appeared in court this week, and John was in the courtroom to listen to those arguments. John, it sounds like the judge seemed somewhat sympathetic to those arguing that the legislature went too far with the Amendment 4 implementing bill.
He did. I think Judge U.S. District Judge Robert Hinkle, in this case, I think he's going to hand down the preliminary injunction that the voters organizations want that will at least stop the new Florida law from going forward. That's a law that requires payment of court-ordered fines, fees, and restitution that be met before, you know, somebody's term of a sentence can be considered completed. While arguments were going on before Hinkle, a few dozen protesters from some of these same organizations who have filed suit, the American Civil Liberties Union among them, they rallied outside calling the new law an unconstitutional poll tax, a lot of the same rhetoric that we've heard throughout this debate for many months now. Here's some of what it sounded like before several speakers addressed the crowd.
Protect our votes! Protect our votes! Protect our votes! Protect our votes! Protect our votes!
There was a lot of passion behind this issue. The hearing ultimately spanned 2 days and included testimony from a University of Florida political scientist who pointed out that the payment requirement could effectively keep about 80% of the 1.4 million Floridians with felony records off the voting rolls. That totally undermines the whole purpose of Amendment 4 approved by voters last year, which was to basically do away with the state's more than 150-year-old ban on felon voting. So here you'd still have people off the rolls. There was testimony from election supervisors and court officials about the complexity of tracking just how much individuals owe and, you know, all these court costs. Counties commonly farm out some of these costs to collection agencies. That makes it even harder for them to track. And anything owed that goes back decades is very unlikely to be easily found by any felon looking to regain his or her rights. You know, that because you'd need to know, well, what do I owe to try to repay it? In the end, Hinkle said that the whole system set up by the legislature with this new law, he called it an administrative nightmare. But, you know, the key thing is, though, whatever ruling this judge hands down, it will be appealed by the state, which also is trying to get the state Supreme Court involved in the matter with an advisory opinion that many think will likely support the idea of felons having to make payments. So it's a slow, slow process, and time is on the side of the state's ruling Republicans, whose leaders, you know, almost all opposed Amendment 4 last year. They are not interested in adding more voters, which is a real wild card, to the voting rolls in advance of next year's elections. Probably now, especially with President Trump's future in such doubt, and the legal delays already have a lot of Democrats worried. I wrote recently about how the Florida Democratic Party has a goal of adding 200,000 voters to the rolls before the November elections, and these so-called returning citizens were going to be part of that set. But with you know, Hinkle also has set a trial date of April 6th for this legal challenge, and it looks unlikely to be settled in any time for the March 17th presidential primary in Florida.
But if he issues an injunction, it would keep the law from going into effect until there's a ruling, right?
Yeah, it would. But I think it would continue the cloud over,
right?
You know, if you're a felon, do you want to go back and try to register? And, you know, there's just kind of that fear that you are again breaking the law if you try to, you know, wrongfully register. Although I think Republicans have generally said that they are not looking to prosecute anybody that did that. But Hinkle, you know, his bottom line was he was suggesting that the legislature take another look at this pay before you vote system next year when they reconvene in January. But again, there seems to be very little incentive for the legislature to reverse what, you know, they've already done. So the fight continues and the delays continue.
Yeah, not good for the state argument when the judge is calling your law an administrative nightmare. But as you said, John, this is a long, long way before this gets settled in the legal system. So, you know, kind of everything is going to stay up in the air as we go into the 2020
election. There was a lot of momentum early on for trying to get these people registered, you know, back in January when the law, when the Amendment 4 first took effect. But I think a lot of that has cooled off since then as far as getting people to show up and try to register.
Well, pretty significant if 80% of the felons who might qualify, you know, are not able to because of these financial obligations. That could really, you know, obviously a lot of people look at this as a civil rights issue because a lot of the people are people of color who are facing these issues. But it also has really big political implications when you have all these potential voters who are, you know, their eligibility is sort of up in the air this way. But the issue of felons voting could be a big factor in the 2020 election. Another big factor is the impeachment debate that has consumed Washington, D.C. and is reverberating here in Florida. Congress is on recess this week, and Republicans are taking advantage of that to stage some anti-impeachment events across the state in congressional districts that are held by Democrats. The GOP is holding a series of, quote, Stop the Madness events outside the office of Democrats in swing districts. A significant majority of Americans opposed impeachment until recently, but polls show public support for impeachment has been increasing nationwide. A Fox News poll released this week showed 51% of Americans support impeaching Trump and removing him from office. John, do you think the Trump campaign and GOP leaders are getting a little worried here?
It does seem like every day there's a new twist to this impeachment drama, but there seems to be a slight but significant shift in polls trending toward more support for impeachment. You know, it's clearly narrow, though, but that Fox News poll is getting a lot of attention because it's the president's favorite network and showing that 51% of Americans say he should be impeached and removed from office. But, you know, Grutter's theatrics seem to show that there's some concern that the seemingly unshakable Trump base needs to be shored up a little bit.
At least Fox News poll found that 13% of Republicans support impeaching Trump and removing him from office. Now that means that 87% are sticking with the president, which is a pretty good number. And I think that they're really trying to keep that number from moving any further, because that'll keep the GOP senators in line, and they're going to be the ones who ultimately have to have this trial in the Senate. But it does seem like the numbers are not trending in Trump's favor right now.
Yeah, it does seem like, you know, that you know, Grutter's showing up in the districts of some Democrats. It seems to be an effort to somehow tell that Trump base that, you know, their favorite candidate is going to stay in the Oval Office and he's going to be eligible for next year's November ballot. You know, Florida is the biggest of the swing states, and we know in our elections how just a downturn of several thousand voters can tilt our elections. So I think, you know, Grutter's is trying to give the Trump base in Florida something to feel better about, to show it's still got some swagger by going in the face of some Florida Democrats.
Yeah, I haven't seen any polling on impeachment here in Florida. It would be fascinating to see. I mean, such a critical swing state, and this could be one of the biggest issues going into the election. So we'll be watching for some.
You know, as
those,
we mentioned, we mentioned earlier about how, you know, this, the congressional Republicans, they keep insisting that there was no quid pro quo, you know, no explicit promise of aid to Ukraine in exchange for that country's attorney general launching an investigation of Democrat Joe Biden. But, you know, that's no reason to impeach the president, you know. But at the same time, it seems like Biden's numbers have been tanking. So, right. in a perverse way, it has maybe accomplished what the president was seeking all along.
Yeah. And Biden was doing very well in Florida, although Elizabeth Warren was gaining on him here. But, you know, this was a good state for him. Will be fascinating to see how his involvement in this whole impeachment scandal affects him. Well, we're going to move on to our final segment. John, your number was 227. You want to tell us what that's all about?
$227 is what is said to be the price for an ounce of medium quality marijuana in Florida, which would put it almost $40 less than the national average. Though I know some listeners probably wonder how I know that, I assure you that it comes from economic analysts for the state of Florida who are relying on nationwide pricing data supplied by the Oxford Treatment Center in Mississippi.
Now, this information is included in almost 800 pages of material that the state is using to do a financial impact estimate on a marijuana legalization effort that is being pushed by an organization called Sensible Florida that comes out of Fort Lauderdale. This group has been working for about 3 years to obtain signatures, and they've gotten about the more than 10% of the almost 800,000 petition signatures they need to qualify for next year's ballot. Now, Sensible Florida still has a long way to go with this effort, but even if Sensible Florida doesn't make it, another marijuana legalization constitutional amendment was launched just last month called Make It Legal Florida, and that got $1 million in investment behind it from the nation's largest medical marijuana company, which is called MedMen. Make It Legal initiative would require cannabis sales for recreational use to be made at existing medical marijuana treatment centers and promises to be highly regulated. And there is another one called Floridians for Freedom that would just deregulate marijuana. So basically, there's no shortage of ideas about legalizing recreational marijuana in Florida. So the state economists' research may ultimately find a place on the ballot under the label of whichever one of these initiatives might make it, if any of them do. But if Florida's current marijuana price is $40 cheaper than the national average and it's illegal, you got to wonder what legalization will do to the price of an ounce of pot. Will it get cheaper or more costly once the state gets into the business of taxing and regulating recreational weed?
All right, John Kennedy with all your pot pricing news. Check in weekly, folks. He'll be updating you as that fluctuates. Well, my number is 2. That's the number of immigration town hall events Sarasota State Senator Joe Grutter's plans to hold before the end of the year. Some of you listeners might remember that Grutter's canceled his statewide immigration listening tour after the mass shooting in El Paso, Texas, by a man who was targeting Hispanics. But Grutter says the listening tour is back on, although he is scaling it back from 6 events to just 2. Grutter's plans to hold town halls in the Sarasota area and another in the Jacksonville area, where his House immigration bill co-sponsor lives. Neither of those areas is known for having a lot of immigrants. And so Democrats are sure to raise questions about whether the tour is ignoring immigrant communities and focusing on GOP areas that aren't very diverse. I'm not sure you can even call it a tour if it's just two events. But the bigger point is that Gruters is not backing away from the immigration issue after El Paso, and he plans to file legislation in 2020 that could further crack down on illegal immigrants in Florida. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Forty, Joseph Borzano, and Adam Fish. And thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.